Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome, everyone, to our podcast series, Hidden Growth Champions, now in its third season. Today in our virtual studio, I've got John Singer. John, thank you very much for making the time to join us today. You've had quite a career in healthcare with various service and other types of organizations, as well as in the consulting and advisory space. We're going to have a conversation about ecosystems. We're going to talk about why they matter. We're going to talk about what they're not and some of the broader opportunities they provide. But just to kind of kick us off, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you for having me, Sarah, and I'm very much looking forward to the conversation. You know, I think that the whole idea of ecosystems has suddenly become a very hot topic. And you have a lot of folks in industry and government, I think, worldwide, trying to understand and reach for ecosystems as a form of strategy making. So yeah, I've been involved in the field for quite a while. I've been in healthcare in the pharmaceutical industry for, I'm going to say, close to 30 years. I'm dating myself, but have grown up in the industry, grew up on the market, business, commercial side of things, have worked in the big technology space, and have been working with systems theory and systems thinking for, I'm going to say, close to 10 to 15 years in terms of shaping and positioning market strategy. So it's an exciting space, and I think it's one whose time has arrived.
Now, John, in a previous conversation, we spoke a bit about, you know, language matters, right? And definitions by consequence matter as well. And people have very different definitions of what an ecosystem is, a business ecosystem. So before we kind of venture into the applications and the various uses of it and how it makes us think and see or perceive things differently, let's just maybe get kind of our definitions right. I mean, in your experience and in the way you look at business ecosystems, what's the best definition you came across?
Well, I say that the best definition is, from my perspective, is understanding ecosystems as economic systems. You know, and that, you know, they basically answer the question, where does growth come from and where do markets come from and how do you understand them and then how do you manage them and then how do you sustain them? And I think that the idea of ecosystems sort of reflects, an ecological orientation or a biological orientation to really how the world works. And you could draw this line all the way back to even the formation of early economic theory. But I think from my perspective, and in terms of how do I work with the concept, it really is how do you stand up and start an entirely new economic system. So when I think about ecosystems, to me, they're sets of markets that are working collaboratively as a single organism.
You know, John, when you kind of remind me, some time back, we wrote a piece about the economics of innovation. And I know there's a close link between our ability to innovate and the ecosystems which we can tap into and participate in. And I remember when we wrote that piece, there was a bit of a backlash, particularly within kind of established corporate innovation functions, because we were essentially putting forward the view and bring some data to support it that, you know, the economics of innovation have shifted. Innovation is far more than just technological innovation and the traditional ways in which one can acquire or step into those realms. But in fact, we spoke about management, regulatory, commercial innovations. And the way you were describing ecosystems reminding me very much of that discussion, that in fact, if we're able to understand the economic system and ultimately the biological system behind an ecosystem, if we're able to understand those signals, those underlying trends, we'll have a much better understanding of the ecosystem itself, and ultimately the role that we can play in and participate in. So yeah, just sort of your sense around that.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And you touched on a couple of big themes that I think represent both opportunity as well as sort of the conceptual roadblocks in terms of intentionally putting in place a capability or a competency to develop a market or innovate a market, or where does growth come from? And how do you think about innovation? I mentioned previously that I spent a number of years in the big technology services space. So I was the chief strategy officer for Cognizant's healthcare business. And prior to that, I was at Wipro. And, you know, and it's very interesting because I would make the case and argue that technology is a commodity input. And if it is innovative, quote unquote innovative, depending on how you choose to define that, it's small scale innovation and it's easily reproducible. So you have this idea of competitive convergence. And so you can't compete really or sustainably for any period of time using technology as your primary source of advantage. Because again, from my work in the tech services space and how do you think about technology, it really is a commodity input and it's a race to the bottom. So I think the way to understand it is, and I think, again, this is going to touch on one of the themes that we were speaking about in terms of understanding strategy, right? So strategy is not technology. Technology is a means to an end. And what's very interesting is if you look at, say, where, just as a parallel, where the United States is thinking about how do you compete against China? And, you know, in terms of strategic competition and trying to funnel more money into, say, artificial intelligence as the basis of competition, I would suggest that that's going to be a short road to parity, right? Because anything that the U.S. can do and fund from the perspective of artificial intelligence, China can do that as well. And so you have sort of an emerging school of thought in some of the circles of the American military, where they're saying it's not about technology, it's about intellectual overmatch. You know, it's about thinking about creativity and strategy and the elements of that in an entirely new way, of which technology is a piece, but it's not the end state.
Now, when we start to have the discussion around business ecosystems, when we have leadership discussions, very often I find that the conversation starts from the center. It starts from the familiar. And then depending on the level of curiosity in the organization, it can branch out. So for example, when we speak about ecosystem partnerships, very often the first indication of it will be around channel partnerships, around established forms of cooperation, established forms of information exchange. And over time, one then ventures into the more exotic, the less familiar types of exchanges, the kind of value streams that are not obvious to incumbents, that are not kind of in the center, that often, very often don't get measured. And I find that when we have those conversations, new pockets of value, new opportunity spaces start to open up. But one needs to really venture out there to understand an ecosystem. One cannot understand it from your own vantage point. The whole debate between an ecosystem and ecosystem really comes from that, right? So I wanted to kind of ask you, how have you gone about helping leaders gain perspective from the outside without losing appreciation for their own organization, without losing appreciation for a role that they may very well play, perhaps not fully visible, perhaps not fully measured, perhaps not fully acknowledged within the ecosystem itself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, you said some things that are really important. And also, I think, important to sort of interrogate just a little bit more. So my approach is understanding that strategy is a creative act first. So it's about imagination and it's about vision. And I started my career in the creative services industry. So I was in the marketing services industry. I worked for the advertising industry. And your job was to continually present ideas to your customer and sell those in. And so it's this idea that first and foremost, when we're thinking strategically and we're thinking about opportunity and we're thinking about creating new pools of value intentionally creating an ecosystem that doesn't already exist, because I think that's also important to keep in mind too. I think there's a general view that, hey, there's an ecosystem out there and how do we play? And that's not incorrect. But if you say, well, we want to drive a transformational strategy and we want to adopt an ecosystem orientation to be able to do that, then part of that is to say, well, let's just go and design our own. You know, so how do you stand up an ecosystem intentionally, and what's the roadmap to do that? And then this is going to, I think, flow back to the comment about how do you think about what I would say is differentiated connectedness, is how do you look at a potential market and the various players within that market as a space of opportunity and as a fragment that you can connect into your own. And then how do you manage that relationship in terms of information exchange, co-development, the co-evolution, you know, and it's that concept of co, right? Cooperation, co-evolution, co-development that is key to all of this. And I think what I was referring to previously when I said, how do you manage it as a single organism? And again, that sounds very, I don't know, maybe a little abstract, but my experience is that you'll have a lot of head nodding in the room that says, yeah, that's exactly what we want to do. And you're going to put in place the processes to do that. But what happens is that you very quickly, organizations tend to default into their own space. Mm-hmm. And that when we're thinking about, say, enterprise-wide, and you know, we're talking about enterprise transformation or enterprise strategy at an ecosystem level, the first thing that you have to do is dissolve the concept of enterprise that is going to extend beyond your company. So how do you weave in the other, I guess, keystone partners would be a way to describe it, within the process of strategy making, decision making, and it tends to be a much harder thing than it initially sounds.
You know, I find this, you spoke about it as a strategy being a creative process. And within a creative process, very often one needs to introduce creative tension, right? It's not that the one side is right and the other side is wrong, but we hold discrete pieces of information that is correct, but it is different. And when we bring those together, very often what we find, and I'd love your thoughts on this, is we find that people on the outside, people who are looking from the vantage point of their enterprise, and sometimes entrepreneurs who do not have an enterprise behind them, but who've got good ideas, who are thinking of different vehicles to, you know, to play in the ecosystem, what we often find is that those individuals are sometimes easier to connect with than people in our own organization. People in our own organization often will sense, the, in inverted commas, the danger in which an ecosystem strategy can threaten existing revenue lines, existing product sets, existing power positions. And often what I find is one could have the conversation out there and create or co-envision what the ecosystem could look like, what it could do if we didn't have the current enterprise in place. And I often find it a very rich place to work from. That's where the answer could be very different to what the current system looks like. So yeah, I just wanted to get a bit of a sense from you in terms of, as you explore, as you venture out and have some of these conversations, do you find willing partners? Do you find people who are interested or curious as much as you are as to what the ecosystem could be?
I do, not only interested and curious, but also recognizing that the standard model doesn't work. Or, you know, if it does work, it doesn't work as well. But I think that you touch on a bigger, more nuanced way of understanding and approaching all of this, is recognizing that the organizational antibodies, if you will, are designed to fight the new and to defend the old. So, you know, I guess I've been consistently surprised and sometimes disappointed that organizations are never underestimate the ability to defend the past. And it's very hard, and this is why I'm often fond of saying, you can't fix, quote unquote, fix a system that's up and running, because yes, the feedback loops are too great. The machine is organized to sustain itself. So you can go in and you can make tweaks here and there, but I think you hit on sort of the bigger theme, is that to be effective, to get to speed to value, to make this work, is really about stepping outside of the current ecosystem, or the current system, if you will, a system of thought, a system of incentives, a system of processes and organizational behavior that may have been built up over decades, and start new is critical to making this successful. You know, there's a reason, I think, why, say, Tesla has been able to get to where it is in terms of the electric vehicle space, in a way that Ford has not, is that Ford, I would argue, is still bounded within the context of sort of an industrial age view, and started the whole industrial revolution to a certain degree, and is finding that to compete against Tesla, you know, is almost going to require you have to step outside of the boundaries of Ford conceptually, operationally, strategically, competitively to create a new economic system again, which is what I think Tesla does so well.
Now, John, let's get to some practical examples of this. I mean, I always remind myself that ecosystem-based work, whether on the strategy side or on the building of new ventures, partnerships, collaborations, et cetera, very often starts off with a conversation. It starts off with spotting the individuals who are open and ready for the conversation. And it sometimes might come to us and impose a different question. So perhaps take us through an example of an organization that you've worked with, which has ended up developing, creating, nurturing at times an ecosystem. And where did it start?
Well, I won't be able to mention specific names of my customers and clients because my confidentialities are pretty tight and I tend to work with a small handful. When we talk about, I think the best and everybody's favorite example of understanding how to stand up and spark and start the flywheel, if you will, of an entirely new economic system. How do you create leverage? How do you intentionally make other industries or other markets a feature of your ecosystem? And that idea is called featureizing. The best example and the prime example, and I don't think there actually are very many, but everybody's favorite is Amazon. You know, the Amazon is and Amazon has been a customer in the past. They were a customer of Wipro's, and I'm not going to be revealing anything confidential, but if you just, you know, a careful read and understanding of how Amazon thinks, and I think that's sort of the operative concept, is that they think in biological terms. So they are very much about how do you, you know, putting in place the capabilities where they are progressively integrating intentionally more and more markets and more industries as features or as components of their ecosystem, as their economic system, which I think last year was close to $300-400 billion or so in recurring revenue. And that's a great example of a flywheel. That's a great example of intentionally designing and putting in place the organizational and cultural capability to know how to work with systems thinking as a form of strategy making and the power that can be. I think Tesla is another good example. The, you know, Microsoft, you know, most of the big technology players, I think intuitively understand ecosystems and systems thinking and network effects and a biological orientation to managing their business. But in general, most of the, I guess, for lack of a better description, old school companies are having a hard time understanding what that means. Digital, quote unquote, digital is really more about an operating philosophy than it is a set of specific technologies. And I would argue that a digital orientation and a digital mindset and digital strategy is really around a biological orientation to strategy.
Do you feel that a biological orientation is something that can be learned, that can be embraced, that can be practiced? Or do you find that, in fact, it's only a very significant shock to the system that will make a leadership team, boards, and other key stakeholders really take note and reconsider their perspective, or even more deeply, their mindset that informs that perspective of the business?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't know that I have an answer. I think that, anybody can learn anything, and you can build out competency and capability. And ideally, you're putting in place the incentives for your teams and organization to not only just learn it, but apply it and practice it and get rewarded from it. It's a heavy lift, though. You know, it really is a heavy lift to reframe and build out a competency to think, to truly think differently. It's a heavy lift. I think that the way to approach it is to find those companies, those teams, those people, those leaders who are already aligned philosophically and naturally get it, and use that as almost the start. Or you could, if you want to frame it within the context of a market, as your initial customer to develop the market, if you will, internally. But it's hard. It's a very hard thing. And I think in general, the early adopters are going to be the businesses and the brands and the industries that are in trouble. or that have a big growth target that they are challenged to meet in a conventional standard model way.
I see. Let's talk a bit about where ecosystems can help solve broader societal challenges. It's something that we face around the world, right? Anywhere from energy, water provision, food, you know, supply chain disruptions, you know, across sectors. When we had a previous conversation about why do ecosystems receive attention these days, one of the hypotheses we've developed is that in fact, it is a way of looking at entrenched broader societal challenges that we could not solve the old way, that we could not solve within existing paradigms, and hence why the interest comes in. But if we kind of turn our attention to the kind of challenges in which we see ecosystems being, if not built around, at least tested for possible solutions, for collaborations where we could leverage others' capabilities in which, using the normal incumbent model, we're unlikely to get to. You know, what are some of the areas in which you feel ecosystems could play a broader societal role where we can make a real dent in entrenched problems that we couldn't deal with effectively beforehand?
I think, again, that's another great question. Sorry. My approach in my area of expertise and my philosophy is in healthcare and in the pharmaceutical industry worldwide. And we've chatted about using malaria as an example. How would you approach and think about changing the impact of malaria in Africa in a way that would be reflective of an ecosystem-centered approach? And I think one of the things that, you know, sort of to keep in mind and think about is this idea that there isn't a separation between, say, public health and economic development. And I think that there's been a lesson from, you know, how COVID shook sort of the world's economy. It's that, is that you really sort of can't separate disease management and healthcare from economic development. They're one and the same. And so it's this idea of like, well, if you buy into that view, then how can you think about healthcare and how can you think about economic development simultaneously and interactively? And how can you apply that very specifically, or starting with an outcome that you're looking to achieve? And so if we say, well, okay, we're really concerned and we really want to change the impact of malaria, how do you do that? Using an ecosystem-centered approach. And I think even more specifically, how do you do that with a market-based view of things? I often think and have encountered sort of this dance around healthcare is somehow being separate from the market, or profit being a dirty word in healthcare. And it isn't, and it shouldn't be, but because I think at the end of the day, people are going to want to make money, whether that's individually, whether that's personally, whether it's for the family, whether that's for a government, whether that's for the businesses that are involved. And so if your jumping off point is saying that things are going to have to be solved with a market-based view, then how do you approach market innovation? And then even more specifically, how do you think about market integration within the context of an entirely economic system that is intentionally designed to improve public health around a specific sort of disease area? So that's how I tend to think about it. And another, I think, aspect of an ecosystem-centered strategy is this idea of shared market space, right? And so healthcare is an N-sided market. It's infinite. It involves everything and all things simultaneously and interactively. And so then the question becomes, how can you pull out pieces and parts and connect them in a way where you're going to begin drawing innovative power from their connectivity, which speaks to the pool of value you mentioned previously? And how is that intentionally designed? How can everybody benefit from that? And then how can that be directed and sustained?
You know, I was thinking, and I was reading that this thought piece around malaria is that one of the reasons as to why I think ecosystems has drawn much interest, particularly in emerging markets, is that much of the public infrastructure isn't in place. So the way in which capabilities can be reconfigured, can be brought into market without a legacy system to work through or change, very often is in place, whether we use, you know, mobile delivery or other models that are out there. So it just made me think about sometimes the challenge that we face in terms of the underlying problem, in this case, the treatment of malaria, can actually benefit when we look at it from an ecosystem perspective in the lack of or the absence of existing infrastructure and legacy systems and organizations.
Spot on. It's huge, you know, and you could make the case that Africa is probably better positioned as an example to design systems of health engagement and improve their health outcomes in a way that the US can't, simply because it's, as we said earlier, it's very, very hard, if not impossible, to quote unquote fix a system, an economic system that is already running. So a really good example in healthcare is this push for data interoperability.
Yes.
And I think what we're finding and what everybody's sort of seeing is that it's hard, if not impossible, to go in and fix technical debt, legacy complexity, and change, in the case of the United States, a $4 trillion economic system to get it to start working together. It's very hard to have data interoperability after the fact. But what the big opportunity is, and I think what you touched on, is this idea that, well, you can design data interoperability as an initial condition, design market interoperability as an initial condition. And I think this is why the emerging markets and those places that don't have legacy kinetics that they have to solve for are better positioned to make a leapfrog, if you will, and being able to make these things happen in a way that, say, the U.S. can't. It's a great point.
John, let me take you kind of, say, 5 years into the future. You walk into a strategy session of a major pharmaceutical and you listen in on the conversation. You watch for the strategy process itself and how it may be different than today. What role do you think ecosystems would play in the strategy creative process?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges is boundary definition. So in the case of a pharmaceutical company or the pharmaceutical industry, and we can even bring this back to malaria, their worldview is defined and bounded within the context of drug. So everything is about, when you're having a strategy conversation, it's about either the asset itself, And how can you bring that asset through the regulatory environment and get to market so that you can promote the feature benefit story and the technical merits of that drug and the implications of that drug? And that's not incorrect, but it's more underconceptualized if what you're talking about is improving outcomes, of which drug is a part. So malaria, there's a new vaccine for malaria. I think that's great. The drug market is a part of improving outcomes in malaria, but so is mosquito control. So is water management. You know, there's many things that can be brought to bear if your end state is improving outcomes as opposed to competing as an input. And I think that's probably the biggest challenge that the pharmaceutical industry has in terms of finding strategic fit is around defining value and competing on outcomes as opposed to promoting and pushing the feature benefit story of a technical input, which is what a drug is. But that's a hard shift. That's, you know, and is touching on those themes that we've been chatting about around organizational competency, culture, incentive, being kinetically trapped. You know, the pharmaceutical industry is very large and very powerful and is defending itself as a drug industry and as a market, and you have deeply entrenched feedback loops that sort of reinforce that. And it's very, very hard to break it.
You know, John, as you were kind of describing it, and then this kind of links to a client conversation I've had earlier today, we were talking about an inflection point as to when a younger generation, which Generation Z, who is already entering the workforce and starting to contribute from a professional perspective and new disciplines in some cases, when they reach key decision-making roles. And what kind of systems, what kind of entrenched systems will they question? You know, we spoke, for example, about the value of homeownership and whether the younger generation will appreciate that or turn what is now called digital nomads into, you know, property no longer seen as an asset class, certainly from a residential perspective. You know, we spoke about financial services and the kind of things that very often as incumbents one could take for granted is this is how the system is, where a young generation, which is only 10 or so years, 12 perhaps, from key decision-making authority, what are the kind of the things that they might question? And I kind of wonder, as you were describing your answer to my previous question, as to whether they may question the drug-centric model of healthcare, if not doing it already, but from a position of power, from a position of authority and control over resources, and being able to, through capital allocation, to funnel funding to where it's most needed.
Yeah, I think they say that science really advances one funeral at a time, and it's a generational thing. And I think that that's part of the bigger theme here, is that this really is a generational sort of shift that's going to unfold. And those new leaders are going to be the ones who are true leaders, because it does take confidence and wanting to, they have a great phrase in China about crossing the river as you're feeling for the stones. It's about how do you navigate your way through the white space. And that takes leadership, and it takes confidence, and it takes comfort in really not knowing the next step. And so I think the next generation of leaders are going to be that way. And they're going to be successful in terms of balancing the current needs as opposed to also developing the future needs. So how do you re-engineer the plane as you're flying it? And the next generation are going to be the ones that are going to be have that sort of skill set and that competency.
That was a great conversation. I know we've tackled quite a few questions. I hope we covered those, but I really enjoyed the conversation and then tapping into your insights and understanding of a market, perhaps from the other side of the ocean, but incredibly insightful. And I just want to say thank you for that.
Thank you, Sarv. I've enjoyed it very much. And, you know, it's an exciting area, and looking forward to continuing working in it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.